We have someone that's going to do a teleconference with us on House Bill 1185, provides certain protections for a structured settlement, and Representative Derby is here, I believe. And so we'll take Representative Derby now, and we've got, I think, a teleconference. Can the person, who do we have on the...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Mike Derby. We have Randy Dyer, President of the National Structured Settlement Association. Mr. Dyer, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, fine. Are you going to take that then? Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Before I get started, I do have a handout for you. May I pass that out, Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. First of all, I'd like to just define quickly what a structured settlement is, and that is when the parties to a tort or a workman's comp claim involving serious physical injury reach a negotiated settlement, under which the victim receives compensation in the form of a stream of payments tailored to his or her future needs. The future payments are tax-free and are funded through an annuity contract or U.S. Treasury obligations. There are companies that are called factoring companies, and that's why we're here today with this model legislation. Factoring companies deprive injury victims and their families of crucial long-term financial security. Their settlements are designed to provide, and they also involve discounts 30, 40, and as much as 50% per year. These factorings create risks of adverse federal income tax consequences for the parties of the structured settlements. And on page 2, you'll note the solution is the Model Structured Settlement Protection Act. And this will require advanced court approval for all factoring of transactions for the following reasons. And I did want to take the opportunity we have on the speakerphone, Randy Dyer. He is president of the National Structured Settlement Association, and at this time I'd like to stand by for questions and have him make some remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is Randy Dyer with the National Structured Settlement Association in Washington. First of all, let me apologize for not being there. I was there for the House hearing, but the holiday weekend I didn't hear about the hearing until it was too late to get there, so I appreciate you accommodating me this way. The issue that's been brought before you is one that is national in scope. Thus far, 18 states have enacted legislation to deal with this problem, and there's another 10 to 12 states that are looking at the issue right now. The bill you have before you, 1185, is what's known as the compromise model. There have been several model bills that have moved through the system over the last 3 years. This one is a compromise between the proponents of this kind of consumer protection and the factoring companies themselves, at least those among the factoring companies who want to have consumer protections and to do a good job with what they do. Recognize, first of all, that this legislation is not an effort to end the ability to adjust payment streams out of structured settlements. It is, in fact, intended to regulate those adjustments so that people are treated fairly in these transactions. You've heard what a structured settlement is. You understand that a structured settlement is normally achieved in a case involving physical injury and normally involving substantial physical injury, often catastrophic. So the people who we're talking about here are the most vulnerable in society. They're people with debilitating injuries that normally last a lifetime. And the payments for their injury and compensation for their injuries are made out to match their needs over that lifetime. In the last few years, these companies have arisen, companies that started their lives buying lottery winnings and have now moved into other sorts of assured payment streams and have found structured settlements. Let me give you an example of how this might work. Assume, Mr. Chairman, that you had a structured settlement and that for the sake of ease, you were receiving $2,000 per month. Now, I'm the factoring company, and my goal is to get this money away from you and to spend the least doing it. The way I would accomplish this is I would come to you and I would say, look, I want to buy $500 of your $2,000 for the next 10 years. So that's a fixed amount of money that that I know I can get from you. And I also know that if you're talking to me, you're probably talking to other factoring companies. So I know that the deal I'm going to have to give you on this first purchase is going to have to be a good one, because we're in competition with other factoring companies. Once I lock you into a deal, however, I don't have to be as good to you, because part of my contract, typically with these factoring companies, is that I take the right of first refusal against your selling payments to anyone else. So on the next deal, you're going to have to sell to me. Now, once we've agreed to the $500, I point out to you that, in fact, your structured settlement has a provision in it, which is required by Congress, that says that you can't sell your structured settlement payments. But I say to you, don't worry about that, because we're going to get around that. And the way we're going to do it is you're going to write to the annuity company, and you're going to change your address to my address. So now your check will come in your name to me. I'll take the right to cash the check. So your $2,000 check comes to me. I cash it. I take my $500 and I send you your $1,500. But here's how I put the pressure on you. You're used to getting your check on the first of the month. Now, I get your check on the first of the month. I cash it and I send you your payment. Maybe I send it on the 5th. Maybe I send it on the 10th, the 15th. With each delay in payment, I'm creating a pressure on you that's going to cause you to go further in debt. And as you do, I'll go back to you and say, well, let me buy another $500 worth of the payments. Now, remember, I don't have to be so nice to you. I may have given you a 20% discount on the first deal. I can take a 50% discount on the second deal. We have seen deals in which the discount has risen as high as 87%. It means the person received 13% of the value of the payments that they sold. Now, you always have a way to remedy this. You can divert your payments back to yourself by simply writing the annuity company and saying, please send them back to me. Now, you may do so fully intending to cash the check and pay me my $500, which you sold me. But in my contract, once you do that, I have a course of action against you, regardless of what your intention is. Now, each of the companies does this a little differently. The largest uses confession of judgment. What they do is they've taken a confessed judgment against you. They take that confessed judgment and the contract into court. They get a judgment against you for the total undiscounted amount of the payments they purchased, and then they can surface to the annuity company and say, we have a judgment against this person for $100,000, and we're going to take his whole $2,000 a month until our judgment is satisfied. So that's how they work that. Some companies take the right to represent you in court as part of their contract. And then they just go into court and bring a lawyer with them who says he represents you, and he just agrees to whatever the factoring company said. The consumer practices for many of these companies have been outrageous. As I said, 18 companies have responded with 18 states have responded with legislation thus far. Another dozen will do so, I believe, in this session. The legislation you have before you will absolutely do the job and will provide the needed protections to people in the state. And with that, I'll end and take your questions.
Thank you very much, Randy. Are there questions from committee of Randy at all? Okay, I guess from our end there are no questions, Randy, so we thank you very much.
Again, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to testify in this fashion.
Glad you're available. Representative Derby, you...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mr. Dyer, thank you for calling in. And as he mentioned, this is an excellent consumer protection bill. I did work with the governor's office. Governor Janklow had passed some structured settlement legislation about 15 years ago. They took a look at this, and this model is compatible with what was presented back then. And at this time, I'll stand by for questions. I do have Don Herman from Rapid City here, too.
Okay, are there questions? Senator Twitty?
Well, have you talked with the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Department about this?
No, I have not.
Okay. Are they aware? I guess it would be.
I'm sure they're aware of it, and we've had no problems with that.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Further questions? If not, thank you very much. Is there further proponents of House Bill 1185? Further proponents?
My name is Donald R. Herman, and I am a structured settlement consultant. I believe I am the only one in the state of South Dakota that works in this area of expertise. Basically, I have been under 7 years of tutorship with structured settlements under Walker Parker Reed, which is a nationally known international settlement company. I then have been with Summit Settlement Services for the last 11 years. I have completed over 802 files of structured settlements in the four-state area. Out of those, I have placed 357 structured settlement cases. In all that time, I have run, in the last 3 years, into two or three cases where this fracturing has occurred. One was a homestake miner. Him and his wife have four children, and he's completely paralyzed in the lower extremities. A independent broker from Rapid City approached him in a financial plan in order to purchase a house that they would facture his payments. The payments were $1,700 a month. Basically, they gave him, for $280,000 of 20 years of payments, they gave him $55,000. They sold it to another person for $75,000, and they pocketed $20,000 in commissions. That's what we're talking about facturing on independent broker scale. This is not where it's done by a national company. This is where it's done locally here by people in our own backyard. In another case, a person became disabled. He had three crushed vertebrae. He was still able to walk, although he had a complete large workman's compensation case. This person was receiving $1,400 a month. He sold his payments for 10 years and received $25,000 out of a company out of Montana. And they had basically, what they did was simply put the power of attorney on the power to cash the checks. And then basically, once you sign that, they use the federal courts or the state courts to ensure that they have a legal binding contract. When you talk about facturing, the only person that hurts is the victim who's already been injured. And that's what this is doing. If we can correct the situation, then we ensure the continuation of structured settlements for those people who are injured in work comp, injury, wrongful deaths, and those type of cases. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Bracken.
Don, can you go back to that first example that you were talking about?
Yes.
I missed that, the $280,000. Can you take me through that again?
Well, basically, what they did was they bought 20 years of payments.
Okay.
And for $55,000, what they did was they found an investor who would give the guy, or give them $75,000 for the investment. They then took $20,000 for their commissions. And then they gave the claimant $55,000 for 20 years of payments.
Okay. Thank you, Don.
Thank you very much. Are there further questions? Senator Sutton.
I'm just wondering, when with these kind of specialty and unique agreements, the individuals who entered into these, did they have any legal counsel usually they don't? Is that...
Well, you're dealing with people who... most of the time on work comp injuries are usually have no credit rating after they go through a massive injury, and most of them don't have personal disability insurance and don't have the right insurances in place to take care of that catastrophic. That's why we have workman's compensation, or that's why we have wrongful death actions. But basically, some of these people basically don't have the ability or the expertise to be in the securities market. And even if they did, for example, I've known cases where clients, I did a study on people of the 802 case files, and we did a survey, and people who did receive money in these type of settlements, Basically, after 6 months, 17% had lost all of their money. Within 2 years, 54% had lost all of their money. And within a five-year period, 97% had no money of the principal of these settlements if they took cash. When you, again, when the people go into a settlement and they say, geez, I want to take this money and I want to make sure I have income for my family to pay my my home payment, my house payment, have food for my children, for them, for the rest of their life, and then I want to make sure I guarantee that to them, and if I die, then maybe I want to also put on that a survivorship benefit so that they have that money there until they get through college or whatever the need is. And you got somebody that comes along and they, all of a sudden this person has a major catastrophe again and needs money, and there's this guy standing on the street corner saying, I'll give you the money for, you know, for the half your value. And that's what it is. My father, a long time ago, was a very close friend to Senator Francis Case, and I did a lot of typing for Francis Case, and one time I was with him on a street corner in Rapid City, South Dakota. And there was a person that was making a lot of loans on mortgages and you know, whatever value that you had. And this is back in 1963 and 62. And I asked Senator Case what kind of guy does that. And he said, in our day, back then, they used to call them loan sharks. And that's what they are still today. Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate it. Further questions? Thank you very much. Further proponents of House Bill 1185.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Ron Schmidt with the American Insurance Association. I live here in Pierre. And the American Insurance Association is a trade organization of property casualty companies, which oftentimes will enter into these types of agreements. And the area is rife with fraud, and we just want to state for the record that we strongly support this legislation.
Thanks, Ron. We appreciate it. Further proponents of House Bill 1185? If not, are there opponents of House Bill 1185? If not, we'll close it to committee discussion or committee action on House Bill 1185. Senator Whitey moves to pass, seconded by Senator Sutton. Comments on that motion? There being none, all in favor of House Bill 1185 going to the floor with a due pass, will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Hello.
Aye.
Ms. Bracken?
Aye.
Sutton?
Aye.
Lefty? Whiting?
Aye.
Egon?
Munson. All right. 1185 will go to the floor with a due pass.